Today I've got the pleasure of sitting with Serafina, a teacher, and Lloyd, who was a teacher and who's now working in industry. And together we're really interested in thinking about the question of, are we preparing children for their futures? And when we talk about future, what we've been thinking is it's not just about whether they go to university and their future education, but their future life, whether they're going to have a happy social life, a home life, be a positive person in their community, to manage the anxieties of life, manage their finances, and manage to keep moving forward and be independent in that. So what we do at Jamie's Farm is we're very conscious that we're developing the whole child. We're looking at their physical, their mental, their emotional, and their social skills, and that's bringing forth the spirit of a child. But in school, I can see that this is much harder, particularly for disadvantaged children going to large state schools. And I'm interested, Serafina, when you think about the children that you're teaching and you think about their futures, what do you think the relevance is of how and what you teach to what you imagine some of those children will end up doing in their lives?
Well, it's difficult because I think there are some elements of what school teaches that students need for their future lives. You know, in school you have to be respectful of the adults around you. There's often sort of, if a child speaks to you rudely, you can point out the fact, well, in school I'm your boss, and if you go into a job and you're speaking to your boss the way you speak to me, you're not going to get very far. And I think for some children who don't necessarily have positive relationships with adults at home, it's important for them to learn those that basic role of respect. Yes. You know. However, so there are things like that school is very good at instilling, but there are other things about the big wide world that school just doesn't make room for.
Lloyd, do you think from your experience being a teacher and then in industry, what would you say have been the skills that you've realised are really valued there, and how do they relate to how you were developing children in school?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think, having now been in industry, sort of for context, I've gone into consulting and I've been doing that for about 10 months now, and some of the skills that are immediately apparent to me that are really valued in the workplace is an eagerness to learn, a willingness to learn, a thirst for knowledge, because they're not expecting you to know everything from day one. But what they do expect is that you want to learn as much as you can and as quickly as you can. So certainly a willingness to learn. I think without doubt an independence to your learning and to your work. In my specific industry, it'll often be the case that they'll say that we need X, Y, or Z by this time, and you're expected to manage and navigate your own time to be able to produce that deliverable. But of course, that's true of almost all industries. So an independence to your learning and a time management skills are essential. And I think also just an ability to work with a team and to find your role within that team, to be able to add value to the team, but also to those interpersonal skills, to get on with them on a personal level, to build relationships and rapport with them, that's also essential. Mm. Those are the things I'd say that have struck me anyway, entering industry.
So I'm really interested in that. I'm wondering if both of you can comment on this, because the things that you've said, which seem very key to me here, is sort of collaboration and communication and that sense of teamwork, some sort of thirst for knowledge, creativity, wanting to learn, and independence of learning and time management. Now, just hearing that, I'm thinking that those are things that actually maybe aren't happening as much in school life.
Well, I think I was saying earlier that what school is good at is creating those the boundaries of respect, and respecting your teachers. But school is so, it has to be so stringent and so formulaic, and let's get all the kids in the classroom, let's get them sat down, let's get them behaving, and then we've got 50 minutes or an hour to get through as much of the curriculum as we possibly can. And in order to do that, individuality needs to be squashed. We just all need to be listening and getting on with it. So that kills collaboration, that kills creativity, and it really limits the extent to which children are practicing social skills, because you're not even most of the time really allowed to talk to each other, or if you are, it's in a very contained manner. It's okay, you've got 1 minute to talk to the person next to you about this, okay, which doesn't really reflect real life.
Do you think that just on that, I think that's really interesting. I'm wondering whether this is there a way that those large comprehensives that are within the state system, which are catering for a lot of our future population, and these children are going to be the adults of the future who will be creating the issues that the country has to deal with, whether they're to do with energy crises or, you know, saving the planet or resourcing or manufacturing, and some of them will be in government.
Yeah, I think to a large extent, I think in the current school system, there's a mismatch between how young people are encouraged to work in the classroom and actually how they might find themselves working in reality when they leave school. So I think it might be a case of trying to more closely mirror the ways in which they will be, their approaches to work after school inside the classroom. And indeed, you touched on the point earlier, Tish, about how they operate in their day-to-day lives is quite in contrast to how they're expected to operate day-to-day in the classroom. So it might be a case of shifting the approaches to teaching and making the lessons and the activities more collaborative, affording more opportunities to communicate with their peers, providing more project work that enables them to hone that skill of independence and time management, rather than, as Serafina was saying just now, quashing that individualism and making the students sit at their own desks the whole lesson and only speak when they've raised their hand and that kind of thing.
But there are lots of schools doing fantastic things and doing as much as they possibly can for the children and trying to provide as much as curricular activities as possible. But there are certain things that you can't escape. For example, I teach languages. If you go to private school, you're much more likely to go on a trip abroad. And when you go on a trip abroad, that is really when you realise this is something real that I'm learning and I can communicate and I can use this. If you're always stuck in your hometown, you really do think, well, when am I ever going to use Spanish? When am I ever going to use French? So you don't get those experiences. Now, there are initiatives. There's an amazing resource called Billy, where children are paired up online with other students in another country and they do an online exchange. And I was able to trial this with one of my classes and they absolutely loved it because suddenly they had somebody to communicate with and they realised, oh my God, there are other students in another country. They're learning English, we're learning their language. We can help each other out. And it made it so relevant because, as you said, Tish, it's all about peer approval and peer interaction. However, that goes outside of the curriculum and we're under so much pressure to get through what we need to get through, and it costs money as well. So you've got to ask your head of department and they've got to ask somebody else, can we get the funding for this? And those sort of things are the sort of things that's very easy to brush away and say, we don't have time, it's not important enough, when really it's so important.
They're key. And I, you know, I'm really struck by that because there are ways we can use the digital world to assist teaching. And I guess we need a massive investment in people sort of thinking about how it can be used within the educational system, because it also, thinking about the way that teenagers' brains work, you know, they want that instant gratification, but they also want that social side of it. The social relatability of being online with someone and talking has a relevance for them. And I think that it's, you know, the other thing in here is that when we're just trying to get through the curriculum and get these children through their GCSEs or their A-levels with certain grades, they too feel, the children I'm listening to are telling me, they feel that there's a lack of relevance, your word, and they also feel pressurised. And I think they're picking up, the teachers are saying they feel pressurised. So the whole system is actually becoming less happy. And I wonder if you have, I love your example there of that use of the online thing. I'm thinking, Lloyd, for you in industry, in the past, there was a lot of emphasis on developing some of these skills through project-based learning, but also through apprenticeship, and through there was a lot more of the learning that was vocational learning, acknowledging that not every child is destined to be academic, and that with what we know now about that huge range of learning styles, it is so hard for a teacher to work with children across the spectrum of neurodiversity and be able to engage them so that their energy goes forward and not into opposition. Do you have any ideas from hindsight, having stepped out of the teaching profession, to what you would like to put back in if you went back into the classroom?
Yeah, I would definitely like to try to accommodate a broader range of learning styles. That's without question, because I did find, looking back in hindsight, my own teaching practice, it probably was quite rigid in the sense that it was only catering for one style of learning, perhaps that being a purely academic, literature-based style of learning. It's a good question of how I'd go about doing that. I mean, Serafina raised a really great example of bringing in digital platforms to help young people. And I think that starting, that's almost meeting them where they are, because often they will be the experts in that arena. They will be the experts on digitization. And so to be able to enable them to learn using mediums that they're actually very familiar with, and they themselves are the experts on, I think that would go some way.
Two things I wanted to touch on. One was, Lloyd talked about the thirst for learning and how important that was in the professional world. And I was thinking about the fact that in within my experience of school, activities that really activate thirst for learning are things that you leave for the end of term, when you've gotten through everything that you need to get through.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about my year eights this year. We did, they were learning about different Spanish festivals and celebrations, or Hispanic, I should say. And they had a project for a week or so. I said to them, you're a travel agent, you need to research a Hispanic festival, and you need to sell me, or sell the class, you're going to make a presentation, you want to convince us to go there, and you can also look up a hotel we could stay in, you know, think about it, you're trying to sell us a holiday there. And I learned so much from them, because they found out about festivals I'd never heard of, and they really enjoyed the creativity of it, and they enjoyed doing it themselves. However, that's just a tack-on thing at the end of term, when you can see how much it engaged them, how much it sparked their curiosity and got them thinking about the Hispanic world in a way that no textbook would. The other thing I wanted to mention was, just when we're talking about children and their what they bring and nourishing the whole person, this year, the Year 11s in my school created, they wanted to dedicate an entire school week to equality, and it was all about celebrating the diversity of the school, all of the different cultures. And it culminated in a catwalk where all the different kids from school who had perhaps different traditional dress from their home culture, they came in, we had a sort of, an MC who introduced each country, and they'd come on, they'd have their country's flag, and they'd have their traditional dress, and the theatre was packed out. It was so full, people couldn't even get in. And there was this incredible sense of community spirit, and everyone was whooping, and everyone was absolutely loving it, and we learnt about each other, and we celebrated our cultures, and it was the highlight of my time at that school. And that all came from the kids, and that was what they wanted to do.
That's just sparked a thought in my mind, Serafina, that those skills that we were mentioning earlier, and you've just been talking to there, a lot of the skills that actually we need in our personal lives and in the workplace are things which children have in abundance already. Mm-hmm. Some of those things are innate, like an innate curiosity, willingness and thirst to learn. The creativity, you know, young people have this wonderful way of viewing the world in which there's less inhibitors. You know, there's more creative freedom in young people than maybe in adults. And some of the skills are developed in virtue of the time that they live in. So for example, time management. They have one amazing time management skills because there's so much to manage. they deal with so much change that those time management skills have been cultivated just in virtue of the time that they live in. So actually the challenge for us as a society and education is perhaps not how do we instill these skills that we need in our daily lives and in the workplace. It's actually how do we give students and young people the license to exercise those skills that they already have and enable them to flourish and show those skills.
To hone them.
To hone them,
I absolutely love what you're both saying. I'm smiling like a Cheshire cat because I absolutely love the notion that there is hope, there are possibilities, there always are. And what you're both talking about is that within children, all these things exist. And if we can allow time, which was the time at the end of the term, if we take some of the pressure off teachers and children, it's the perfect place for a lot of these things to be happening, isn't it? For those celebrations, all of that creative thinking, that sense of coming together and collaboration. And that sense for children, which I think is really key, is of finding some optimism again, because I think they live in a world where they're absolutely bombarded with pessimistic messaging. And as adults, our job is to actually embrace something of the spirit of the child that's within us and go back with them into that optimism and creativity. And that genuine way of creating things together. And I loved your examples, and I hope that anyone listening is going to think, well, we could do a version. So thank you both enormously for your time today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much.